Hello, I can't hear anything. Hey. Jeez Louise. Can't get it. Hello.
Hey, Chris.
How we doing?
Great. I love Block Talk Radio, just for everybody, if anyone's still going to be listening to this. Sorry, guys. They've been booting us out. Wouldn't let me connect, so I had to call in on a guest line. And now we're here. So welcome to the Vegas Hockey Podcast.
Sometimes life throws us these annoying curveballs, so there's no doubt about that. Actually, there's a lot of happy news from a personal standpoint in terms of hockey personal for both of us to talk about, but why don't we jump in into the Vegas Golden Knights, San Jose Sharks series, a very controversial thing to talk about. In game two, but what has your sense been so far in the series, Mark?
Well, San Jose owned game one, no doubt about it. Martin Jones played good, but the Golden Knights are playing right into their hands, and it continued again last night. The Sharks' MO is to take a bunch of liberties, if you will, to get you off your game and get you to take retaliatory penalties and capitalize upon it. That's what the Sharks do. 5-on-5, they're nowhere near as good as the Golden Knights. That's been proven in the series. Even in game one, 5-on-5, the Golden Knights were even strength, it was 1-to-1. Any other format, 4-on-4, 4-on-3, there was a 5-on-3. There was even some 3-on-3 time. The Sharks outscored them 4-to-1. In game two, they come out on fire. 3 goals in the first 7 minutes or so. And then Colin Miller takes a penalty. They don't score. Colin Miller comes out of the box, rips it. But then he takes another penalty, and it starts down the same trail that the Golden Knights are going to have to break if they're going to get past the Sharks. And the Sharks score 3 goals in the last three minutes of the second period or first period, and tie the game up, going to the locker room. And then I guess this is where the controversy you were talking about was. Starting the second period, the Sharks appeared to score a goal, but it was waved off immediately due to contact with Marc-Andre Fleury in the crease. On the ensuing power play, Mark Stone pots one in, and the Knights were able to hold on. William Karlsson scored a shorty later in the game, pretty much to seal the deal. But they continued to take penalties and penalties the rest of the game, and that's just playing into the Sharks' hand. I've seen the Sharks do this too many times in the playoffs, watching them against the Kings. And when you play whistle-to-whistle against them, let's say you're standing near the crease and their goalie makes the save, holds the puck, gets the face off. You start to skate away and they cross-check you in the back. Just keep skating away. Don't turn around and get involved with it. Go back to the bench, do a change, go to the face-off dot, whatever you have to do. You don't respond to it. That's how you play into the Sharks game. You let them get under your skin. If you skate away, they get even more frustrated. Then they get more egregious, and the penalties start getting called on them. That's how you play the Sharks. That's how you beat the Sharks. And they're going to have to clean that up going into Game 3, or we're going to see the same thing again. So they got their split. They're coming home 1-1. That's what they wanted to do. Two would be better. That's what Fleury said. But they did what they had to do on the road. They got their win. They came out with a fast start in game two. They need to continue doing that in the series. They chased Martin Jones. They need to continue doing that in the series, and they'll be fine.
Yeah, clearly one of the biggest strengths of the Sharks is their power play left-handed side. I mean, coming up two shorthanded goals, one of which, incredibly, was on a 5-on-3, which is, you know, if you're the team, you know, if you're the team with a 5-on-3 and you don't score, it's such a letdown to let alone for that to happen and then give up a goal. But that's not a formula you want to go down with. I got to tell you, maybe per the rule book, because I was, you know, looking at, you know, I watched the NHL Network last night to get their views on the disallowed goal that would have given, obviously, the Sharks say they had a lot of momentum coming back from 3-0 last night to tie it at 3 and then would have taken the lead. I guess per the rule book, because the analysts on NHL Network thought it was a fair call, but then looking at it again, they thought it was the right call. And then I think the NBC folks, including Keith Jones, although Keith Jones had a good point, he thought it should have been disallowed, but he didn't think it should have been a penalty. Because that's the other part of it. You can call goalie interference without a penalty. And
that's true.
Yeah, so the part I don't understand is Cordier was, I mean, he was outside the crease. I mean, he's entitled to screen the goalie. He's entitled to be outside the crease. I mean, Fleury's entitled to go to the top of the crease or outside it too. But if someone's outside the crease and the goalie, you know, wants to move up and go outside his crease, he's allowed to do that. But then if there's contact, then in my opinion, that shouldn't be on the forward. I don't understand that at all.
There's specific language in the rule that says even if the goalie is outside the crease, contact that prevents him from an attempt to make a save is considered goaltender interference. There's specific language in that rule that
– Yeah, I know. But the thing is, the problem I have – and maybe this is what the rules say, well, tough luck, but the problem I have is Cordier got there first. It wasn't like Fleury was outside the crease first, and then Cordier got there. Cordier got there first from watching the replay a few times, and then Fleury, but, you know, I just think it's a terrible rule. I'm not for goalie interference or anything like that, but, I mean, especially in the playoffs, guys, you see it all the time. We see so many goals so far where goals have happened from screening the goalie and things of that nature. But then to add insult to injury, to call a penalty on it, which then makes it an unreviewable play, which I think is a terrible rule, by the way. To me, it should still be allowed to be reviewed. So to me, that was just there was so many things I didn't like about it. But to me, if you want to say that I'm disallowing the goal, I don't agree with that, but I seem to be in the minority. That's fine, and if that's by the letter of the law, although, again, I don't like that rule at all. But that's just me. There was no intent by Cordier to cause contact against Fleury. He was trying to cause a screen. Yeah, I would just say it like this. And I, you know, I pull for the Knights, but I don't bleed, the colors of the Knights. The black and gold. Thank you. My brain's all over the place this week. If I was a diehard Vegas Golden Knights fan, I would say to myself, oh, my God, we just got a unbelievable break. And if I was a San Jose Sharks fan, I would think we just got hosed. I mean, I'm just saying if I was those fans, that's how I would feel. Having said all that, if you're the Sharks, you know, it's early second period, kill the freaking penalty and move on, or come back. It's only 4-3 at that point, early second. you know, you have to parse. Not that I'm trying to compare this, the Islander series, and we'll get to that later on. But in Game One of the Islander series, and this is a little bit different. It's not as a painful situation, but it was a critical time in the game. Basically, in the third period, they swallowed the whistles. I mean, unless you were going to tackle somebody on a golden opportunity, they weren't going to call a penalty. That's how they basically were calling the third period in Game One. Then, lo and behold, they call a ticky-tack penalty with around 10 minutes, 12 minutes to go in the third period. Because Anders Lee, you know, was right around Sidney Crosby, and now they're going to call a ticky-tack penalty. And that, you know, you can't have that. I know it's Sidney Crosby, yada, yada, yada. But the moral of this story was that was a really bad call and a really unfortunate call for the Islanders at a really critical time. But they got through it. They killed the penalty. You have to be resilient. So the Sharks, you know, yeah, it was a bad call, and I saw an interview with Evander Kane after the game, and he was upset about it, and I get it. But guess what? You're going to have to overcome situations that aren't the greatest in terms of calls or situations. Now, that was huge because it wasn't just we should have gotten a power play or we were put on the PK when we shouldn't have, kind of solved an actual goal. But I get it. That's even a higher level. But you gotta overcome these things. Things are gonna happen that you're gonna have to get through.
Yeah. Well, going into the 20-minute mark, there's 9 penalties on the Knights, and I'm looking at it now. Four penalties on the Sharks. So I don't think the Sharks have too much to worry about as far as not getting calls. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that one was just like, so for me, such a bizarre one kind of thing. But, you know, like I said, I seem to be in the minority, and it seems to be the letter of the law. But, yeah, like I said, that's, you know, I mean, if anything, a goalie could start embellishing. I'm not saying Fleury did, but a goalie can start embellishing when he gets beat. Just act like he got hit, you know, and it's like, hey, I got hit, you know.
And we've seen many more egregious cases of goaltender interference where they allowed the goal to stand.
Absolutely.
In the regular season, you have someone laying on the goalie in the crease, and the puck goes in, and they say good goal, and everyone's scratching their head like, okay, that's not interference, I guess. And there was contact between Couturier's backside and Fleury's head.
It was.
Maybe that's what it was because it was contact to the head, and the refs didn't like that. I don't know. But
the part I don't like is Couturier got to the spot first. First of all, it was outside the crease. And second of all, Couturier got there and established position first. So contact came when Fleury moved forward, and obviously the Couturier, the player, is facing puck, so he's got his back to the goalie in the net. So you know what I mean? Like, I just given all those givens, that's why I really don't like the play. I mean, I'm glad the Knights won, to be honest with you, but I was not a fan of the call. And then, like I said, insult to injury. You give Cody, you should have just said no goal, and then, you know, that's it. Now, obviously, the Sharks would have probably challenged it, which is fine. And then, you know, if it went by the letter of the law, then the goal would have stayed. But the penalty part was even worse. But you know what? You know, how about Aaron Dell not give up a juicy rebound like he did, and then making an easy goal for Mark Stone and make it 4-3? I mean, the Sharks' goaltending last night was not good and not going to win a lot of playoff games. They're going to get goaltending. I know there was too many breakaways and 3-on-2s and 2-on-1s and things of that nature. So that's part and parcel, which we talked about going into the series, that the Sharks have not played great team defense along with not getting great goaltending. They kind of go hand in hand. And they got to tighten things up a lot more than that, San Jose, if they're going to win the series.
Look, if you have 8 power plays and the other team scores more on your power plays than you do, there's something to be said. The Knights penalty kill did a fantastic job, and let's give credit where credit's due. I'm not blaming the refs. I don't like that. It was a call that was made, and both teams are going to get bad calls. Both teams are going to get favorable calls. It's going to even out. But if you have eight power plays and you score once and the other team score twice on your power plays, then that's a recipe to lose in my book. So let's give the Knights penalty killers all the credit in the world.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they did a tremendous job. Tough situations. You know, so even if at the end of the day we can, you know, everyone comes out and says, you know what, they got absolutely hosed or whatnot, you have to overcome it. And it was still early in the game. It was only early second period. And you're only down by a goal. I mean, when you're only down by a goal, it's been down by three goals in the first, you know, 6 minutes of the game. It doesn't seem that huge of a obstacle, especially with all the players that they have, all the offensive players that they have. And so, yeah, you have to overcome. But so it'll be, like I said, it'll be, you know, to me, you know, I'm still thinking of a long series, but unless the Sharks really tighten up some of their team defensive play and get better goaltending, I said the Knights in seven. I still feel good about that.
Yeah, and well, the Knights have to stay out of the penalty box.
That's true too.
That's the other thing. You can't play into their shenanigans. You have to play your game. Like if they play like they played the game last night, even though they did take two penalties in the first 10 minutes, they'll be fine in the series. I feel much better now because the Sharks played a near perfect game against the Knights in game one. Again, give credit where credit is due. The Sharks beat the Knights in all facets of the game in game one. And I was concerned going into game two, but they ended up getting the split, even though they still haven't played close to their best hockey, except for, I mean, the third period last night, the Knights had four shots on goal. Now I get it. They were protecting their lead. They were making sure the puck got out. so on and so forth. But we still haven't seen the Sharks' best period, I don't think, in this series. Or the Golden Knights' best period in this series. And then at the end of the game, I haven't seen an update yet, but it looked like Cody Eakin got his nose broke in the scrum. The horn blows, the game's over. Skating out of the corner, and Evander Kane, of course, cross-checks someone in the back, and then three Golden Knights jumped on him, and it turned into a full line brawl against the sideboards in the corner. And Eakin skated out of it with a very bloody face mask and a very bloody uniform. So I don't know what his status is going to be. I'm pretty sure if he has to go with a shield, he's playing. Cody Eakin played a great game last night. He was physical, more physical than I've seen him. He was fast, scored the first goal on a nice snipe from the slot. First shift to the game for him. And I thought Cody Eakin should have been, you know, one of the three stars of the game. He played fantastic. So
and Vlasic got hurt for San Jose, so he didn't come back. So if he's going to miss any time in this series, that's going to talk about before about tidying up defensively. He's a big part of that. So that's going to be a hit to the Sharks, but. Again, you got to overcome. I keep saying the word. You got to overcome because everyone's going to get some injuries here and there. There was quite a few scrums at the end of the game last night in some of these, contests. The Sharks one was that one for sure. There was one with the Islanders as well. I'm trying to think. I'm missing one. I think there was a third one. Can't remember what now. But what time's the game? What time is game three tomorrow Vegas time?
Let me check real quick. I was just
that's probably a night game, I'm guessing.
Ah, night game. I see what you did there. 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock Pacific.
7 o'clock. It's okay. So 10 Eastern. So, yeah, like I said, I think we're in for a long series. It'll be interesting to see how the Sharks bounce back. I'm sure they're smarting from their own play. Again, you have a 5-3 and you give up a shorthanded goal and don't score yourself to boot. And you go back and look at a close game, you're like, oh my god, you know, how did that happen? You know, so and you like to see Vegas play a full 60 minutes. But I will say one thing that I loved about the Vegas game probably the most yesterday, and then we can move on to some of the other series in the West and then go East. But that is, you know, to be up 3-0 like that, and you know, and you have to feel really good, and then not only does it go away, but before the end of the first period, especially a late one or a couple of late ones, to go from 3-0 to 3-3, to go into the locker room and say, all right, tie game, throw it out, it's behind us, let's move forward. Again, resiliency, a big theme. And so I really did like that a lot from the Vegas team.
Yeah, they did talk about that at post game, and yeah, the ability to go from the high to the low, and then even give up the first goal in the second, even though it was just loud, and come back. There's some fortitude. There's some, you know, you're on the high, you're on the low. There's some adversity, and yeah, okay. Let's say they get a break. And the goal is just allowed, and then they score on the power play. But then to go ahead and finish the game off, get the win on the road, that's a good sign for the Golden Knights for sure.
Well, why don't we jump over to the Winnipeg-St. Louis series, and I got to tell you, I watched a good part of that second half of that game last night, and I'd be really concerned if I was a Jets fan right now, beyond the obvious, beyond losing the first two games and close games, both at home. That game-winning goal that Hellebuck gave up, that can't happen. I'm not saying it was a total Mr. Softy, but in these games, that can't happen. And it was a nice snapshot by Ryan O'Reilly, but you got to keep that puck out of the net. I don't like again Hellebuck. You know, again we talked about like the Sharks. So as good as Winnipeg was, like San Jose in terms of record, they did not have a great year in terms of playing total team defense and correspondingly did not have a great year from their number one goalie. And that is, you know, continued in the playoffs. And, you know, there was huge expectations for this young team coming into the season. I think the Hockey News, for instance, is one publication predicted the Jets would get to the Stanley Cup final. And, you know, to me, they had a disappointing, you know, it shows you how talented they are. When you have a 98, almost 100-point season, and I feel like it was a disappointing regular season for the Jets, that shows you how talented they are. But, you know, this is going to test this team's mettle right here. And I know St. Louis is one of the top road teams. They have a very mediocre, at best, home record. And it's still a long way to go in this series, but I would say I would be very concerned about where Winnipeg's at right now, and St. Louis has continued to pick up where they've left off. You know, basically they were one of the top teams in the league since January, since the calendar turned to 2019. So very concerned if I was a Jets fan.
100%. When we did our playoff preview episode last Tuesday, I was so borderline going to pick the Blues. I call that series a coin toss. And
yeah, you did.
The only reason I didn't take the Blues was because of the rookie goaltender. And even though Hellebuck hasn't been, you know, as good as he was last season, I thought that just the experience of being through a round of the playoffs and going through that would be enough to get past the rookie goaltender. But Jordan Binnington, what a story that kid's turning out to be. Goes on the road in his first two. I saw a stat this morning on NHL Network. Only one rookie goaltender has been on the road and won his first two starts, and that was Curtis Joseph. So if you've done something that only Cujo has done, and you're next to him, then you've done something pretty well. And, I mean, kudos to him. He kept him in it last night when Winnipeg was buzzing. And you know, allowed them to get to the point where they could take advantage of Hellebuck and score that game-winning goal. Definitely. I've seen a different version of these St. Louis Blues win the first two games of a playoff series and then lose the next four to the Kings. I don't think this version of that, the Blues, is going to do that. I think the Blues are going to win the series. I'm kicking myself for not going with my heart on this one and listening to my head. St. Louis has been, aside from Tampa, the best team in the West since January 1st. To go from dead last in the league to 1 point from winning the division, that team's got the mojo right now. And I mean, the one good sign for the Winnipeg Jets is Patrick Laine has scored in both games, and he hadn't scored in, I think, 19 games before the last game of the season. So maybe his scoring touch is coming back a little bit. That's a bright spot. That's something they can look forward to. Maybe Morrissey's got the rust off, and he can start working his way into driving that offense the way he can. But if you're in Jets Nation, they're going to have to play their best game in Game 3 for sure.
Yeah, and today's a big day for the Nashville Predators because, you know, there's a couple of teams. The Nashville Predators don't want to follow the path of the Winnipeg Jets, and that is not only to go down 2-0, but lose the first two games at home. So, you know, Dallas again. Right, Dallas again, getting good. You know, this is their secret to their success this year was good overall team defense, great goaltending, and, you know, finding a way to win close games, and that's how they got the number one wild card. And that they were able to follow that formula in game one, went with a 3-2 win. Getting Matt Zuccarello back was huge in the game as he was involved on the game winner. The young defenseman had a couple of goals. And, you know, that's what Dallas is going to look to win these 3-2, 2-1 games and hopefully, you know, get some big plays out of Ben and Sagan and Rajal off at key times. And so it's a big game. Everyone's going to lose the game. You're going to lose home games along the way. This isn't the NBA. You're going to lose home games along the way, and you're going to win road games along the way. Nashville, definitely a team that could win on the road. So, but having said that, this is a big game. This is a big game for both for the Predators today. This is a game they need to win.
Yeah, I do think that Nashville will some way find a way to win tonight. Surprised me when you threw out all the defensive stats on Dallas. They have the reputation, obviously, of being that offensive team, and that they played that good of team defense all year was surprising to me, actually. So they used that same recipe, like you said, and if Dallas can win game two, we're going to have four unlikely 2-0 series, I believe.
Four underdogs up 2-0, right? Yeah.
Yeah. To preview the East, no one had Columbus up 2-0, and you got to figure Pittsburgh was going to get a split on Long Island. And then obviously the St. Louis series being up 2-0. Crazy round of first round of the playoffs so far. The other
Western was Calgary, which couldn't have gotten off to a better, first game to the series. Only one game. So if you're Colorado and you come out and win tonight, all's well in the world. But if you're Calgary, couldn't ask for a better first game. Get a shutout, so maybe that makes even though he's a veteran, everyone always needs confidence, and obviously their goaltending and Mike Smith had a strong game one. It will be interesting to see if Colorado can break through tonight, get a split. If not, you got to like the position Calgary will be in.
Yeah, well, that game was nothing for a long time, and I got to give it up to Mike Smith. I've been critical of the old boy, but maybe it was because he was wearing the Mike Vernon throwback mask in game one, but he did pitch the shutout, and he kept him in the game when, I mean, Colorado was pushing play in the first period quite a bit. I watched a good part of that game too, and they had a few power plays back to back in the first period, and Mike Smith played a heck of a game. The Vernon throwback mask was awesome. I thought I'm like, what is that? And then the announcer said, well, it's a tribute to Mike Vernon. I was like, okay, that was the last time that Calgary had won a playoff series. I believe Mike Vernon was in net, so he busted out a Vernon throwback mask, which was awesome, and channeled his Mike Vernon. So he kept him in the game early. Colorado was definitely buzzing and had some high-quality scoring chances. And then the game got away from him. But if they can match that compete level in game two here and break that wall on Mike Smith, I think that's when he tends to unravel a little bit. So the longer you let him go being successful without scoring on him, the more confident he seems to grow. And that was the case in game one. So it'll behoove Colorado to come out like the Golden Knights did and get one or two early and rattle them up a little bit. And Calgary's a team that can kind of lose discipline, lose their focus, and start taking penalties as well. So if that's the recipe for Colorado's success, is to get them rattled a little bit, score, jump on them, start fast, get them to take a couple penalties, take advantage of the power play, increase the lead, and then play from there. Should be a good game, though. I don't think it'll be another 4-0 game out of Calgary. This is my upset pick, so I think Colorado will respond tonight. I don't know if they get the win or not, but I think they'll have a much better effort for 60 minutes than they did in game one.
Well, I guess I should go to the East now and talk about the biggest surprise by far, and that's the Blue Jackets being up 2-0. And, from afar, haven't seen a lot of this series other than the highlights, simply because it's been on the same time as the Islanders, and that has been a bit of an intense religious experience watching that. So anyway, in terms of Tampa from afar, they get up 3-0 in game one, and from what I heard and read, and speaking with a good friend of the show, Dan Harrigan, they try to put the game in a freezer and try to play not to lose the rest of the way. Although ironically, it seems like Cooper did that, and then in the third period, with about, I think, want to say 10 minutes to go, was it? And they're up 3-2 on the power play. He's got I think he had all forwards out on the ice. And that's, they have defensemen who are good offensively. That's, if there's, to me, that's a point where you might want to be a little bit more conservative given the situation. I mean, obviously, you're going to try to score on the power play to put that game away. But and maybe things came a little bit too easy for Tampa Bay, and maybe mentally they said, oh, this is going to be easy, and everyone's telling them, everyone's saying it's going to be easy and all that stuff, and maybe subconsciously that kicked in. I don't know. But then that game, gets away from them, and you're like, all right, it's one game. Kudos to Columbus for hanging in there. But, wake up call. But they did not respond well last night. And, again, we all knew, not even just going into the playoffs, we all knew going back to probably December that the way, that the Lightning was going to the year one of the big favorites, and at that point were the clear number one team in the league, we all knew at that point that it was Stanley Cup or bust for the for the Lightning, that anything other than a Stanley Cup championship this year was going to be a huge disappointment. And maybe that expectation, that pressure that comes along with that, is gotten into that room. And we've talked about how a lot of those guys on that team have all come very, you know, both from wearing a Lightning sweater to wearing another sweater like the New York Rangers, people like Ryan McDonough and Dan Girardi, to name a couple, come very close to winning a cup, but haven't gotten there. And, you know, maybe that it's a bit of a mental battle for them, and they didn't respond well to it. And now they're down 2-0, not going to bury them. But, you know, and obviously Columbus was in the spot last year. And again, you know, the Capitals were not as big of a favorite at this point in the first round like Tampa is this year. But again, they were on the spot, Washington, and they showed their resiliency, and their mettle, if you will, was being tested, and they got through it. Now, if you go back and recall, that game three went to overtime, and I think Columbus at the crossbar.
Double overtime.
Thank you, sir. And Columbus at the crossbar, so they came within a millimeter of going up 3-0. And in fact, I think Lars Eller kind of scored a fluky goal and wound up winning that game for Washington. So, but sometimes that's what we'll take. So, Tampa's on the spot tomorrow, and I'm sure there's a lot of very nervous Lightning fans, and they probably thought that this round wasn't going to be one nervous moment. I'm sure on Wednesday night, early on in that game, they probably didn't think that at all, and I can't blame them. But and then we'll have to see what happens with Kucherov.
Broken news, sir. 2-game suspension.
Two games?
Hello. 2 games.
Wow. Well, you know, I gotta say this. It's warranted. I didn't think they would. Real quick, and I'm hogging the segment here, and I'll give it to you. But I really, I didn't think he was going to get a suspension simply because, A, no one got hurt. B, he's one of the biggest stars in the game. And C, the position that Tampa's currently in. I thought he had to get at least a game because he is so lucky that he didn't really hurt someone. That was a very dangerous thing that he did and a very stupid thing that he did out of frustration, and that can't happen. And so good kudos to the league. I think they made the right call. That can't happen. So, you know, look, they have plenty of firepower besides him, but, you know, they're on the spot tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, old school days, you could just about I was going to make a horrible joke, and I just caught myself. You could do just about anything to anybody in the playoffs and you weren't going to get suspended. But the last couple of years, the league has been doing what I think is a good job in carrying the discipline forward into the playoffs. If you remember in the Vegas Golden Knights series last year, Doughty took a run at Carey's head and got a game.
That's right.
I want to say that Wilson...
This was far worse, by the way.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
In my opinion.
Wilson got a game off in the playoffs, too, last year, I think. So they're doing a better job. I think if you want to compare it, I saw the comparison to the Kadri hit. I think that one was a – I don't know. You could kind of compare them. The Kadri hit, the guy he hit was already engaged with another player, but not as maybe as vulnerable a position as being down on your hands and knees against the boards. And it is, you know, raised up into the hit. And this, he did, you know, leave the ice to deliver the hit, but that's because he didn't have to. He is lucky that he didn't hurt anybody, but I don't think that you should legislate penalties based on whether an injury occurs or not.
No, I agree with you.
You just legislate the act. Whether he was fortunate enough not to injure somebody is great, but I don't think you dictate a penalty on what the results are. You dictate the penalty on what the act is.
and he had already.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I was just thinking how the league was going to rationalize the play, and I'm glad they took that tact. And nothing against Tampa. Big good friends with Dan Harrington, so I'd like to see Tampa win for him and everyone down there. Nothing against Columbus. But I think the league made the right call, and you know we'll see. We're going to see what Tampa's made of. John Cooper called it. They're in a 5-alarm fire right now. So
yes, sir.
They have to. Tampa has to come out, play their game, play intense without being tense, which is not an easy thing to do. So we'll see what. And Columbus, obviously have, you know, I'm curious, I'm not sure if it helps them or hurts them that they've been in this exact same position as before. And, I tell you what, I am with you. If Tampa comes back and wins game three in any way or fashion, I think they're going to win the series. I think for Columbus to win the series, they need to win game three. As crazy as that sounds.
I would agree with you, except for the Kucherov angle. Having two games
That's
off,
true,
I,
not having him
I,
for the two games.
Yeah,
right.
I think if Columbus wins one of the next two to go up 3-1 or 3-0, then I think they get him. It is ironic they were in the same position last year against the eventual Stanley Cup champion, Washington Capitals.
What a situation would it be if Tampa would have lost in the first round.
Well, we've seen it before with the Washington
now
Capitals.
Now I know,
most
but...
recently, the President's Trophy team getting bounced in the first round. Anaheim's done it. Washington's done it. We've seen it happen, so...
Yeah, but they were so much better than everyone else. We haven't seen a team have the regular season like the extent. I don't think that the extent that they had. That would be a big blow, and it would be interesting to see how the team would react. They just signed John Cooper to an extension during the year, so I wouldn't think that something would happen to him. I wouldn't think, but that would be, although if they wound up getting swept, then I wouldn't rule out anything. But having said all that, well, we're not there yet. So let's see what Columbus.
In the playoff preview, so that if Columbus can knock off Tampa Bay, then Kekalainen's off the hook. I don't care if they get no draft picks. Coming up, that they win their pass for me. We were saying what it would take at the trade deadline to make this a worthwhile gamble, and it was Eastern Conference, Stanley Cup final at least. If they bounce Tampa, I'm good. I'm good with it. Even if they lose, Duchesne, Panarin, Bobrovsky, whatever. And another thing Bobrovsky got off his back was that he had never. Given up less than 3 goals in a playoff game in his career, and he took care of that last night. So that's off his back now, and Bobrovsky may get better as the series goes on because of that.
Absolutely, it's a good point. Let's save the Islanders for last before the OT segment, Islanders Pens, because the other two series have only played one game. Quick thought on each for me. Great first game for the Leafs. Hate to say it, but it was true.
Yep.
Good game by Freddie Anderson. Bruins are in the same position as Nashville. Don't want to lose the first two games at home, no less. So they need a big effort today. If I was a Bruins fan, I wouldn't be hitting the panic button. But it's a big game for them today. And the Caps game, I caught some of that on Thursday night. I'm like, I flipped it on. I thought it was supposed to start about a half hour later, and I flipped it on a little bit late, and the game was just a few minutes in. It was 3-0. I'm like, oh, my God, what the heck happened here?
Yeah.
And Carolina, again, like Vegas, took too many penalties, let Washington go to the power play. But I will say this about game one for Carolina. Really like the fact that they even
scrapped.
After the terrible – That's right. After the terrible start to the game, that they made that a very tough game for Washington, and they had to kind of fight tooth and nail and kind of hang on a little bit at the end, if you will. So
yeah, they did.
Hopefully, from a Carolina perspective, if they can deal off that, clean up the mistakes, and use that and play a full, you know, quality 60 minutes, maybe they could take game two and get the split that they need. So that's what I'm kind of interested in seeing today from Carolina.
Washington better come to play tonight because, look, Carolina's a young club. They have just enough veteran leadership. But, you know, you're going to go on the road in a hostile barn, defending Stanley Cup champions, and you didn't get off to a good start. But they righted the ship. They settled the waves. And Svechnikov came back in the third period and scored two beautiful goals, one driving in from the right circle, flipped it over Holtby, and then just a few minutes later caught a cross-ice pass and buried it before Holtby could come back across. And it was definitely nailed by the time for the Capitals. That was I agree. Kudos to Washington for mustering the comeback, and the nerves will be pretty much out of the building, and tonight we'll see where the series is going to go. If Washington can go up 2-0, it may be a short series. But if Carolina can scrap in and get one, maybe Washington goes on the road, drops a game, and then you never know what could happen. I think in the other series, Boston and Toronto, we need a larger sample size on both these, obviously. But, I mean, Toronto just gave it to them in Boston. Game one, came out ready to play. Toronto, another team like the Sharks and the Golden Knights, that came down the stretch not exactly on fire. But they got that out of their system, and they came into Boston and laid the wood to them. So Boston is in the situation now where they have to respond. And I'm sure they weren't thinking about that game one before game
one. And this
one.
There's a lot of pressure on the Leafs in this series, in my opinion, because even if they play a great – this might seem unfair, but to me, this is going to be reality. Even if they play a great first round and lose, let's say, in seven games, and could have gotten either way, at the end of the day, they wind up losing the first round. This will be the third year in a row that they've lost in the first round now, after from coming from the rebuild. Now, 2 years ago, they were dealing with house money, and they played great and against the Washington Capitals team. Last year, they played a tough series, came back. I think they were down 3-1 in the series, but played a terrible game seven. You know, sooner or later, with these teams, it's about moving forward with your program and moving forward with your team and towards the ultimate goal. And obviously, they had a very big off season by signing the prize guy, John Tavares, the hometown boy, if you will, last July 1. So if they were to lose in the first round, and it would be like, all right, well, what are we? Where are we going? I mean, are we just a great regular season team and you know, not a team that's going to have success in the playoffs? I mean, what is it going to take for this team to get going? There's going to be a lot of questions, is my point.
Yeah.
A lot about this franchise. So, yeah, so I think there's a lot of pressure.
Real quick,
we got
3 minutes. We got 3 minutes left, Chris. Get to the aisle.
Yeah, so basically the questions going into the series was, can the Islanders score enough? Can somebody or a couple people come forward? Can their power play, which was one of the worst in the league for the whole season, let alone three for its last 50 and their last 22 games, believe it or not. And, you know, they, for the most part, have done a good job of playing good overall team defense, got a little spotty at times in game one against Pittsburgh, too many chances. Robin Leonard bailed him out, won it in overtime. Much better job in game two. Jordan Eberle, Matt Barzal has really both stepped up in this series, both having adding that offense. They got a power play goal in each the first two games. They don't, again, no one's asking that power play to be off the charts. It needs to contribute, and it has contributed. So they hold serve. They're taking it one game at a time, as Barry Trotz says. And the Nassau Coliseum was electric and loud and all that stuff. So let's see if they can get a split in Pittsburgh. But, you know, obviously, this, you know, the old saying is you're not in trouble until you lose a home game. And, you know,
yep.
Pittsburgh is a championship-level team in recent times. So a long way to go in this series.
Yeah, real quick, we've got about 2 minutes left. The one thing that concerns me as far as Pittsburgh fan goes is that we saw that earlier in the season and continuing on through that Malkin's kind of losing his discipline a little bit. But when you see Crosby and Hornquist and Letang start to unravel a little bit and show their frustrations when you're big boys, I think I saw a stat, Crosby with 3 shots on goal and 6 turnovers in the series. That's not Sidney Crosby-like. That is going to be frustrating for him. But when your big boys are losing the discipline and control of their emotions a little bit, that's when you start to worry as a team. And you use house money. I don't think the Isles are on house money. I think they've been a good team all year long. But, you know, they held through at home, and now they got to hit Game 3 running and continue frustrating that club, because we've seen it bubble up now, especially later in Game 2. And if you keep that frustration level going, and their skilled players are worried more about, you know, their emotions than they are about playing hockey, that bodes well for the Islanders.
Yeah, and real quick, Trotz has put the young duo defense pairing of Pulak and Pelech against when Gorski's been on the ice, and they've played absolutely unbelievably great. So I'm sure he's going to try to continue to do that in Pittsburgh, although Pittsburgh does get last change, so something to keep in mind to look out for as a key.
Perfect. We were going to get into the ping pong balls, but we're out of time for this week. We had to push
yeah.
our guest back to next week. Unfortunately, Russ is going to be with us next week, correct?
Correct. We have Russ Cohen next week. Promise everyone, sneak preview the draft, and then in 2 weeks we're going to have Rob Soria. And we'll try to get a little Edmonton Oilers talk and around the playoffs. So, because they're going to have a very big offseason ahead of them as well.
All right. Well, we are out of time for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Sorry about the rush we got to, and we ended up pulling it off. So, that's live radio for you. Anyway, for Chris, I'm Mark. This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast, and we're done.